if you want others to be brave with you need them to tell stories about how well you received it and that it helped. I tell clients when we do it like a 360 and they collect feedback on me, the best thing I can do is show people I listened and try. Even if I don't succeed in getting better at something, the fact that you listened to me and are trying is valuable.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process. Hey, welcome to the show. In this episode, I am jazzed because you are going to get four ways to say hard things at work. We're going to understand why it feels so stinking hard to say what we need to say at work, how to do it, and importantly for all of us listening today, as leaders, how do we build teams, cultures, and organizations that support being brave? So our guest today is actually a returning guest, and we have to go all the way back to season 7, which was 3 years ago. We're now in season 17 here. Our guest is Ed Everts, the president and founder of Excellius Leadership Development, the author of 3 books, including his most recent that we're going to be talking about today, The Bravery Trick, 4 Easy Ways to Say Hard Things. And Ed is also the host of Be Brave at Work, a podcast focused on bravery in the workplace. Ed, welcome back to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
I am thrilled to be back, David. Thank you.
Well, I know that we have picked up some new listeners since 10 seasons ago. That was quite a while back. So if you wouldn't mind, I want to ask you again to take us back to an early memory of yourself as a leader. Maybe the earliest one you can remember, but take us back. What's the first time you can remember thinking of yourself as a leader?
My father was a leader in retailing, so I always had this influence of trying to be better at work and observe others in the workplace. So, you know, quite honestly, from my first job post-college, when I also went into retailing, you know, being an effective manager and looking for ways to do things better was always very present for me. I think I got that, you know, observational skills from my father. So, you know, in retailing, it was of great interest to me. And I used to think of ways to do things and models for how to do things of that nature. And, you know, I hope throughout my career that I've been a great student and that the work that I've written and the talks that I give and the information that I share is helpful to others because it comes from experience. It's not just thoughtful things that I thought of one day as I was sitting in front of my laptop, but experience actually working with and navigating through different types of relationships.
And there's definitely a through line from those early experiences of that observational and here's opportunities and I see how we can improve things to bravery at work. And today's topic, the bravery trick, 4 easy ways to say hard things, because you're looking at how things can improve. And that's definitely a theme of why we want to be brave or say anything at all. So before we get that far along, though, I'd like to, on this topic, you do a really thorough job in the book of really breaking this down and looking at the challenges, why they're there, how we overcome them, and you've got a good model for us to follow. So I want to start with when we're thinking of being brave at work, and you open the book talking about some of the common places we're not as brave as we could be. So what are some of those areas that we should be focused on and getting our thoughts in gear as we enter into this subject?
Well, there are 2 ways that we find ourselves not as brave at work as we'd like to be. One is a planful way where I want to say something to someone or have a conversation with someone in the future, and I have time to prep and prepare and think about it. And unfortunately, more often than not, at least based on the surveys we've done, people have missed those opportunities to say something. They just said, nope, it's too hard, too challenging, I'm just going to move on. And then there are in the moment bravery opportunities where something just happens and I have to react in a way that can be helpful. So that's important for people to recognize, is that bravery comes in a couple of ways. It also, when it is planful or in the moment, it happens in a number of ways. And I know all of your listeners will nod their heads in agreement because we have all experienced these. The most common, I believe, is in a meeting where you're with other colleagues talking about whatever, and you want to say something or make an observation or ask a question and just don't, because you just believe you're going to tie up the agenda, or maybe we've already talked about this before, or maybe I'm going to get belittled or judged and eyes will roll because I've asked something that seems naive or innocent, whatever it might be, the list is endless. And so we avoid saying something at a meeting to help the meeting move further. A second area that's of interest is also in giving feedback. We work with lots of people all throughout our careers, and we want to help them be better or be more effective in what they're doing. And I might observe something that I think you should hear in order to positively impact your career, and yet don't do it. And you know, these both, David, are things that later we look back with regret, right? When I ask people, is there something in the past that you didn't say or didn't do that today, upon reflection, you wish you had? 95% of people shook their head and said, yes, I can remember not saying something to somebody or not saying something at a meeting that I think would have been helpful. So, you know, those are just two examples of times where people could be a little bit braver. And the key word there, and then I'll end talking, is the goal of helpfulness. And so this is throughout the book. Bravery is not an opportunity to belittle somebody. It's not an opportunity to judge someone. It's not an opportunity to prove you're right. The goal of being brave is to help them be better than they are, and to think about something or be aware of something that they can use in order to further their career, further their opportunity. So helpfulness is a key component of being brave at work.
Yeah, that helpfulness really, I resonated with that as I came across your definition and interpretation of bravery and how we're going to, the goal of being helpful in those moments. And for me, where it really, one of the places I have seen that be a real avenue to bravery was in public speaking. And so coaching and working with people who, obviously we do a lot of public speaking, but helping people who don't to get there and who suffer from stage fright and things like that, to shift your focus from, I need to go and make sure I'm looking good in front of all these people, to, hey, like if I'm bringing them a cup of coffee and in service to them, I'm not worried about how I look. Here's your coffee. They care about getting their coffee. So that I, if I'm showing up to be truly helpful, it automatically starts to make all this feel very different, doesn't it?
It does. And this is a key component to being brave at work. And one of the key themes we talk about in the bravery trick, oftentimes, if there's something, David, I wanted to share with you that either I have a hard time sharing, putting the words together in order to make it effective, or that I think you're not going to hear well, the first thing I do is think about all the reasons I shouldn't do it. And I can easily come up with a list of a dozen reasons why I should not have this conversation. I usually don't spend any time on what's the benefits of me having this conversation. So what I ask people to do is flip it and say, okay, what is the good reason? What are the good reasons? How can I help David in respect to the conversation I want to help have with him? And I can navigate the challenging pieces through one of the four strategies, which is practice, right? How do I say it in a way that's going to be well received versus not well received? But you have to think about the benefits of me helping you. Because again, if you're not saying it in order to help them, don't say it, right? It won't go well. It won't be well received. It won't be a good conversation. You have to have the aura and the influence of somebody who's trying to help that other person versus, again, as I like to say, judge and belittle them.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to get into that some more. And you've got to actually, that's one prerequisite that I'm intent on helping that person. And I'm truly showing up with that. But there are some others too that we'll get to in a little while. I want to step back because I thought this was important in the book that you talk about why it's hard. What's going on that created some of these challenges? You've already listed a few, right? We get very caught up on what people are going to think of us and being looked down upon and other things like that. So there's those fears that we have of status and how we'll be perceived. But you also talk about like how even our education system and that all of us have experienced, right? And how we've come up plays a role in cultivating some of this reluctance to raise our hand or say the things that need to be said.
Yeah, when you look at reasons why we are not as brave at work as we'd like to be, there are a number of reasons for that. And one of them, and we should cut ourselves some slack, is especially in the United States of America, our educational system. You know, very few of us attended a program in junior high, high school, or college about how to be brave at work. You've done a lot of work on workplace conflict. You know, there's been very few classes in those programs on how to navigate conflict. We all hear you should, right? An absence of conflict is not good. There needs to be healthy, respectful, professional conflict at work. We haven't learned how to do it. And so I go to junior high, I go to high school, I go to college, and then I get my first job. And guess what? You know, welcome to the company, Ed. Oh, by the way, you have to terminate David or so-and-so, right? And it's like, well, I don't know how to do that, right? I've never done this before. So we've not been taught how to be brave at work and how to say something to someone respectfully and professionally in order to help them.
And to show up with the genuine curiosity, the insightful questions, all the different things that can be there. So I think that is important when you, and the way that you opened that segment talking about, we need to cut ourselves some slack. So often I find when we're having these kinds of conversations that the first one we have to have is with ourselves. And so to have some grace for, it's okay. It's okay. I'm feeling this. It's okay that all of this. And that starts to give me some power to work through it all.
Yeah. And I tell clients all the time, if they're having a conversation with somebody that they believe is hard to have, or they believe the other person isn't going to like hearing, one of the early things that you should do in the conversation to cut yourself some slack is to say it. Hey, David, this is the first time I've ever talked to anybody about this before, so I might not say it beautifully, but I will do the best I can. Or, hey, David, this isn't something I talk a lot about at the workplace, so pardon me if I fumble a little bit, but you know, just let them know you're not great at it. Don't go in thinking you have to be the, you know, Laurence Olivier of bravery conversations and deliver it perfectly. You may not. And in fact, it's okay not to deliver it perfectly. It's more important that the person recognizes that somebody's observing what it is that others are experiencing than saying it so beautifully that they're going to be emotionally moved and, you know, dramatically decide to operate in a new way. You know, these oftentimes are multiple conversations. They may not happen in the first conversation. Hey, David, I know this is the first time that you've heard this. Maybe we found out that it's the first time that you've heard it. You know, why don't you think about it a little bit? I'd love for this to be a meaningful conversation. Let's meet next week, pick up the conversation and talk a little bit more. And that buys a little time so that people have a time to digest it. So if it did hit me poorly, I can come back hopefully and say, hey, I know I responded poorly to the conversation we just had. I've had some time to think about it, and you know, I do want to talk about it, right? So I got through all of the nasty, and now I'm ready to have a more productive conversation with you.
Absolutely. You know, what you're just mentioning is that when we do the instruction and provide people the techniques and ways, and we're going to go through the model in just a moment, but that can, I appreciate what you're saying there, that can create some additional, shoot, now I got to get the model right. And beyond any of it is show up with genuine compassion for yourself, for the other person, for a spirit of helpfulness, and have the best conversation you have. And you're going to learn, you're going to get better. It's all, and it's going to work, but nothing changes if you don't give it a shot.
Right. And unfortunately, most of us, based on our experience, and you know, a lot of it's led by TV and movies and how people interact with each other in those worlds, you know, think these are hard conversations or challenging conversations. Donna Hicks, professor at Harvard University, has written a couple of books on dignity. And, you know, that's part of the helpfulness model. You know, I should not have a conversation with you unless I'm trying to help. And I need to ensure that I'm treating you with dignity. Everybody deserves to be treated with dignity. It doesn't matter what you're doing. And if it's really bad, then I really deserve having this conversation with you. But just ensure, you know, as a takeaway for all of our listeners, David, that they only should have this conversation if they're looking to help, and they should always treat the other person with dignity and respect.
Yeah. And I have been on the receiving end of some conversations where somebody shared some really hard things with me, and it was brave of them to do, but I also needed to hear it. But yes, what made it possible? The dignity. And, you know, when we get into some of the prerequisites, you know, one of the prerequisites that you mentioned is to have a positive relationship with that colleague prior to your bravery conversation. Yeah. And that's one of the three. And then you already mentioned one of the others. So we'll talk more about those. But that, even in a short time frame, you can establish, I really am here on your behalf. And I'm saying this to be helpful to you. Now, I can choose, even if it's difficult or whatever, I can choose what I'm going to do with it. But that intent to truly help, like I had no prior relationship with this person. They had heard me say something, that she walked up, said, hey, do you mind if I share? I know this isn't your intent, but here's how it's coming across. You know, it was hard to hear. It took me a day or two to process it, but she preserved my dignity, but also gave me exactly what I needed to hear, you know?
Yeah. Oftentimes when we hear feedback, David, it strikes us in one of two ways. Either we're surprised to hear it. So we had a blind spot. We had, you know, there's that whole intent versus impact. I certainly didn't come in today to intently offend anyone or do something disruptively, but that was the impact that it had. So I'm really surprised to hear it. Or you're telling me something I know, right? Yeah, I've heard this before. I know this happens. Thank you for sharing it. And now hopefully I need to do something about it because it's followed me for some time. You know, a lot of times when you're telling somebody something about how people are experiencing them, they know it. You know, they've heard it before, right? It's not the first time that they've heard it. And so it's important when you're having a brave conversation to share what it is that you want to share, but also ask them. Again, transparency is super important. Be transparent about your delivery. You know, this is the first time that I've had this type of conversation, so please excuse me if I fumble through it. And secondly, have you heard this before? Right? Very basic, simple question. And the person says, yes, I have. Okay, what have you heard? Right? Tell me a little bit more what you've heard in the past. Maybe that's a solution for us. Or I've never heard this. I mean, I have had clients who have behaviors that I'm shocked. Nobody has ever said to them, gee, has anyone ever told you, you X? And they're like, no, I've never heard that. And I'm assuming they're being honest. And it's surprising, but it's also factual because we avoid being brave. And so it's very possible that this person throughout their career has done something and nobody has had the bravery, because this is kind of how we've been raised culturally, to say something respectfully and professionally in an effort to help them and treating them with dignity.
Yeah, I have had clients and direct reports for some of them who some of these behaviors, they've had 30 years of practice at some of these negative behaviors that nobody ever addressed. And it's like it entrenches that behavior because no one will address it. So it gets to be a self-reinforcing thing. And
right.
But it's really limiting their performance too, which is the sad part. All right. Well, we're talking about the bravery trick, four easy ways to say hard things. Our guest today is Ed Evertson. Ed, we've been dancing around it. So before we get into the model, let's talk about these prerequisites. There are three of them that you recommend that we be thinking about before we actually engage in brave conversations.
Yeah. So we talked one about the idea that you need to be helpful in respect to the conversation that you have with others. And if you're not being helpful, if you're there to show them that you're right or to prove that they're wrong or to judge them or belittle them or hurt them, don't have it, right? Because it will not be a helpful experience for either of you, including yourself. So it's super important that you operate from a premise of helpfulness. The second is, and this is a little bit more challenging because it takes a little bit of time, is ensuring that you have a positive relationship with this person. You know, if I have a positive relationship with you, your likelihood of listening to me is significantly greater than if I don't have a positive relationship with you. So if someone walks up to you one day who you've never met, who works at your same company and says, hey, can I talk with you about something? You know, I may say yes, of course, and happy to talk, but you know, the impact of it's going to be significantly less than someone that I work with a great deal. So you know, having a positive relationship is something we talk a lot about these days because it's never been announced, but we are slowly moving from a hierarchical workplace where there's the boss and, you know, the employees and so forth and so on to more of a relationship-based workplace. I think driven a lot by LinkedIn, where we now know a lot about each other and we can post information about each other and be aware of each other in more of a relationship type mode. And the importance of having a relationship is super critical.
Yeah. You know, it's just like in sales, right? We're more likely to buy from somebody we know and trust than given the alternative, if we have that choice. And this is the same kind of thing where we're more likely to be effective if we've got a positive relationship and they know and trust, or we're more likely to receive that feedback from somebody that we know and trust. And so to invest in that in the front end. And I do think that that is challenging sometimes, because often I can look back and realize that I am at the point back, I can think of earlier times in my career where by the time I realized I needed to have a brave conversation, I also then realized I did not have the relationship. I had not invested in it. And it hadn't really occurred to me until got to that moment. And like, oh, okay. Now what do I do? Is this is really irksome. It's really not helpful for the team or our client or customer. And yet I haven't really put myself in the position to have that conversation. Is there anything we can do in those moments where I recognize that I don't have the positive relationship that would make this the most helpful? Or sometimes maybe the other person hasn't been as open to that. I can, you know, different types of situations, and yet where it still might be appropriate for us to say something.
And there is a little bit of a trick where, yeah, I do believe it's more important that you are brave at work with somebody than not brave. And so don't let the fact that you might not have a positive relationship or may not know them well prevent you from figuring out a way to move forward, because it's the value of you saying something to them greatly exceeds the detriment of not saying anything at all. You know, I talk to people a lot. And one of the things I do when I have a brave conversation is say, you know, hey, I want to share something with you that might be hard for you to hear. But I know 6 months from now, if I never said anything and you heard it then, the first thing you would say is, well, why didn't you tell me anything 6 months ago? So I want to, right? I want to tell you now that this is what I'm experiencing so that you know it. Because, you know, the earlier I know something, the more likely I can do something about it. If nobody ever tells me something, my likelihood of being able to work on it or fix it, especially if it's a blind spot, is seriously, seriously diminished.
Yeah. So going in with, if we don't have that prior relationship, going in with the true motivation to help that colleague or boss or whoever it is, or family member, whoever it is we're talking, I guess it's not family at work, unless it's family at work, and it could be.
It could be.
With Karen and I, it is every day. So, okay, three prerequisites to the conversation. So we need to be motivated to help the colleague or whoever we're talking to have a positive relationship with them prior to the bravery conversation, if at all possible. And then have the drive and opportunity to be brave. Talk about that final one there. Have the drive and opportunity to be brave. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, in many organizations, we don't talk enough about the cultural importance of being brave at work. If I ran a company that had, you know, 1,000 people, I would want to ensure that they all had strong relationships and that they all could be brave with each other in an effort to help, right? If I knew I was going to say something to you on a regular basis in an effort to help, then that would be super important to me. So you need to work in an organization and be in a place where this idea of being brave with each other and sharing information to help each other is implicit, right? That we talk about it and experience it. So you need to have enough social awareness about where you work to identify the degree that bravery is embraced so that it is more likely to impact you. Again, I'm not saying if you work in a place where no one's ever brave that you shouldn't do it. And it's a great way to role model this fantastic skill of sharing something with me that might be hard for me to have heard, but has helped me. So you do want to be aware of the organization and the culture and relationships that exist. And that's where kind of this drive and opportunity comes from, that you have a place where you can say what needs to be said because you have a good relationship and you're trying to help.
It reminds me of something Karen often says. There is a difference between courage and stupidity. And, you know, she had a very tough situation in her career where her direct supervisor told her explicitly, if you value your career, you do not say anything to that senior leader. Well, now she has a direct, you know, a direct instruction not to say anything in that moment. And so she had to really choose how she was going to follow up on that and express her own bravery. And she found a way to do it, but not without, you know, not by violating the direct instructions she was given. So context matters. And in a little while, we're going to talk about how, as a leader, you can help to build that culture and context.
I believe for our listeners that it is more likely that they have heard direction on not being brave. Don't say anything. Don't interrupt, you know, don't rock the boat, you know, things, then how to be brave, right? I'm not suggesting how to be brave is not talked about at all, But we all have had these stories where someone says, "Oh no, you don't want to talk to her about that," or "Oh, he's not having a good day today," right? There's all these things culturally that we have created that hinder the likelihood of us saying something. And I'm sure Karen, from her perspective, wanted to share something with that senior leader that would have been helpful, right? She wasn't going in to belittle and judge this person and make them feel
No.
bad, but wanted to share something. But the mentality is, "Oh, you know, we don't do that here," right? So
Yeah.
that's where this drive and opportunity comes from. It's, you know, are you working in a place, and can I work in a place where bravery, like conflict, like dignity, are embraced and are part of our culture?
And as you're listening to Ed Everts, author of The Bravery Trick, Four Easy Ways to Say Hard Things, talk about that. The opportunity there for every leader is to be teaching that. So yes, we can say, well, no, okay, you're right. I never had anybody teach me those things or say this. Like, well, you're learning it right now, and you have the opportunity to start teaching your team and to role model for them what it looks like to be on the receiving end, not just modeling it yourself so they can see you doing it, but also encouraging them to have those conversations with you and be the safest person they can have those conversations with, so they can extend that to one another, to future teams and other situations that they're in. Great leadership opportunity.
And I just, so we're somewhat jumping to the end of the book, which is okay, but being a good receiver of feedback is one of the best things you can do in an organization. So if you want others to be brave with you, you need them to tell stories about how well you received it and that it helped the relationship. I tell clients when we do it like a 360 and they collect feedback on me, the best thing I can do is show people I listened and try. Even if I don't succeed in getting better at something, the fact that you listen to me and are trying is valuable, very, very valuable to me. So, you also want to be a good receiver and creator of a place where people can come and tell you anything that they want to tell you, right? So, we talk about psychological safety and the importance of me being able to say what I need to say without being judged and belittled, that that I can receive it well, that I appreciate the feedback. That even if I disagree, you know, I can say, let me think about it a little bit and get back to you and talk a little bit more about the topic. But if you're not a good receiver of it, you're hindering the likelihood that the organization can embrace it, right? So somewhat, you know, the activity starts at the head of the fish, right? That the head of the fish has to emulate and role model the behavior that we all want to see.
And such a beautiful practice because, as you said, when people see you receiving it well and working on it, even if imperfectly, it makes it that much more likely that that person who might have been a little reluctant before, the next time they have the opportunity or you ask for feedback or they have something to share, it's much more likely they're going to feel comfortable doing it.
Yes.
All right. Well, Ed, you said we're skipping ahead. So let's dive into the meat of The Bravery Trick, Four Easy Ways to Say Hard Things. So, what is the bravery trick model? How does this work?
So this comes from really my 25 years in corporate America and 16 years as a coach. I also hosted, as you mentioned in my intro, the Be Brave at Work podcast, where I talked to 250 people about being brave at work. And it became apparent in those conversations that there were repeated behaviors that people demonstrated in order to make great progress. And then, as this idea of bravery started to tingle in my body, and I started to decide that this would be a very interesting topic to write about, I did a survey and we had 106 respondents talk about specifically being brave at work. And so from that, I took, you know, we call it a model, I think, because we have to call it something in the book. But, you know, I don't think any of this is brain surgery, but it's just, you know, four simple things that you can do in order to increase the likelihood that you will be brave at work. I'm not suggesting this is a solution that works for everyone. I'm not suggesting it's always going to work, but it increases the likelihood that you'll say something that might be hard to say or you think might be hard for the other person to hear. And the four steps, in a nutshell, are practice, presence, future focus, and flexibility.
All right, practice, presence, future focus, and flexibility. So let's walk through these. What do you mean? Let's start with practice. What does that mean?
Right. So I'm certainly not the first person to ever talk about the importance of practice. But, you know, unfortunately, too often, if I need to have a difficult conversation with you, I'm like, oh, I've got to talk to David today. Well, You're not ready to talk to David today, right? You haven't even thought through what is it that I want to say. Maybe I haven't done that exercise of what are the reasons that will be helpful that I talk with them versus the reasons I don't want to talk with them. There's always going to be something in each of those buckets, but you want to go in from a really helpful perspective. So practicing what you want to say, the first step is getting it out of your head. So in a notepad, on a piece of paper, on a typewriter, whatever your style is, you know, get out onto paper and get it out of your head. What is it that I want David to hear and know? And then I suggest that people craft what I call talking points. So this is not a script. So this isn't something you hold up and read, but these are the key things I want to make sure I say in whatever order I say them, right? David's never going to know what order I wanted to say them, but you know, what are the 3 to 5 things I want to make sure that I definitely say in this conversation? And then the next thing you want to do is find a colleague. Maybe it's someone else who reports to the same person or works with the same person or knows the same person, whatever, but find a colleague who you could practice with and say, look, I need to have a difficult conversation with David next week. I'd love to share with you a little bit about what my thoughts are. Can you tell me how you feel when we talk through this? Can you ask me some questions? Are there any triggers, words that I use that I probably should avoid? You know David as well as I do. You know, what do you think will be his response, right? But kind of get it out of your system a little bit. I mean, the first time you do it shouldn't be with David, right? It should be now the third or fourth time I've done it, and it'll feel a lot more comfortable. You know, we use sports as an analogy a lot in our country because we see it on TV all the time. And I'll tell you, the first time a baseball player has hit a baseball or a football quarterback has thrown a football is not on NFL sports, you know, on a big game day. They've been doing it for years and years and years to try to get good at it. So, you know, practice is all about getting the thoughts that you want to say out of your head onto paper and then working it through with a colleague to ensure what it is that you say is tight, concise, helpful, respectful, and professional.
And that same process, as you were mentioning at the early part of the show, when we were talking about the two types of these moments, there's one where we're planned and we're able to really think it through and plan it out the way you're describing. And then there are the more in the moment ones. Well, we can prepare and plan for those too over time as we get to know what some of the technique that you're describing is visualization, right? Every performance athlete, when they go run that super marathon, they've run it in their head 50 times before they ever set foot on the track, right? So we can kind of do the same thing and be ready for those, some, not everyone, but some of the things that we know will come around. We can go through that process that you just described, can't we?
We can. And I do believe being brave is a skill that you can learn and get better and better at. I spent my whole career in human resources. I regretfully have terminated a lot of people in my career, hopefully legitimately, for a number of issues. But I will tell you, the way I did it at the end of my career was way different than the way I did it at the start of my career. And it wasn't that I enjoyed it. And it always made me feel nervous because you never know where the conversation is going to go. But I was a lot better at it, right? I was a lot smoother. I was a lot more confident. I knew how to start the conversation. I knew to jump right in. You know, I've sat with leaders who want to have a difficult conversation with somebody and they spend what feels like an hour setting the person up. And I'm like, will you please tell them why we're here? Because they're wondering why we're here, right? So, you know, whether it's planned or in the moment, these skills will all grow and evolve the more you do it. And by the way, I don't think you have to be brave every day of the week with everybody you work with. So this isn't something you do constantly because people are like, oh my God, do I have to do this every day and, you know, find somebody that I have to be brave with? Of course not. You might be brave with your boss once a year, maybe twice a year, but you want to be confident when you have this conversation.
All right. So that's practice. Let's move to presence.
So presence is all about being in the moment. And, you know, it's interesting. I also have a lot of clients, as I'm sure you and Karen might, who want to improve their executive presence. And yet I don't think anyone's ever defined it extremely well. I think it means different things to different people. You know, I want to improve my executive presence. And the first question I ask is, can you tell me a little bit more about that? You know, what is it that you feel and you're experiencing and that you want to get better at? But to me, presence in a bravery conversation is all about being there in the moment. I'm more likely to connect with you and engage you if you believe that I'm all in. So where we speak, the time of day we speak, the day of the week that we speak, you know, what electrical gadgets are in the room, right? These are all relevant to the conversation. And so I ensure that you find out if the person's a morning person or an afternoon person. Try not to speak in your office. Try to find a conference room. Do not bring any technical devices with you. Try to speak in a room that you can close a curtain or something and not get distracted, right? And you've got to focus everything and all of your energy on this particular conversation. You want that person to know when they leave and they talk to somebody else about it, hey, David just told me something I didn't want to hear, but he is all in on helping me, right? So,
I'm 100% present and focused with you.
100% on this
Okay.
topic, and whether it's a 5-minute conversation or an hour, I am all in on helping you because that's why I am here, is to help you.
All right. So we've got the practice element, we've got the presence element. Next is future focus, which is an important. They're all important, but this one I thought was particularly important.
Well, future focus is an avoidance technique. It's easy when we talk with somebody about something that's happened to get stuck in the past and talk about the past and what happened in the past. And, we spend so much time there, we don't talk enough about what is it that you need me to do in order to experience what you want me to experience a little bit differently. So I've learned in a client work that I do with the university that it's okay to reflect on the past. I'm not suggesting you don't talk about the past at all, but it's the old 80-20 rule. 20% on the past, but 80% of the conversation, most of your energy has to be on what is it that we need you to do differently? What is it that we want you to focus on differently? How do you do it a little bit differently? What ideas do you have on how you can make this more effective, right? You've got to have them more focused on the future and the direction you want them to go in, than feeling kind of weighted down or depressed about the past. I can't change the past. Past has happened, right? So I can't change the past, but you and I 100% can influence the future. And if we agree that this is sticking with you and is making sense, let's now talk about the direction that we want to go in. Again, a lot of people love talking about the past because it happens, so they know what they're talking about. Right? It's almost like reading a screenplay. You can read it and tell people exactly what it is. The future is a little bit less focused, right, in respect to where we want to go and what we want to do. So I might tend to avoid that, but that's where you have to spend the majority of your time.
And the other element of that I think is the through line again, as we're talking about all this, is if you're truly trying to be helpful, and I say this being somebody who I can get stuck in the past, because I want you to understand how right I am about this thing that happened, right? This happened and I didn't like it, and I didn't like it for justifiable reasons, but I need you to swallow, own, and be able to repeat back to it, right? And that doesn't help anybody. It doesn't even ultimately help me feel that good at the end of the day. Beyond being seen for a minute, what's truly helpful, if I'm really interested in helping that other person, is that forward focus that you're talking about. And I think that's the, if we're truly trying to be helpful as opposed to all those other motivations, we have to be forward focused.
Yeah, and I'm smiling as you're talking about past conversations because we've all had them, right? Hey, here's something that happened. No, that's not what happened. Well, I thought that's what happened. Well, here's what really. And next thing you know, a half hour has gone by, and all we've been talking about is my perceptions of what happened. We haven't even talked about what you need to be doing a little bit differently to be more effective, which is why I brought you in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? So it's super, super important to spend a little time reflecting so the person knows what it is you want to talk about. But then you have to shift to let's talk about the future. And you
Yeah.
have to help them a little bit because they might be stuck. Well, I want to go back. And I know it's interesting to go back, but let's talk more about where we need you to go, what we need you to do, how you need to act or behave in order to help the situation.
Absolutely. And it can be a good off ramp for either party when we get stuck cycling and circling around that the drain of the past and rehashing it all to say, okay, off ramp of that, my way out of that vortex of gravity is, all right, let's talk about the future. Yeah, I just thought that was so important. All right. And then the final element of the model is flexibility.
Well, this is my favorite of the four, David. I think this is the most interesting of the four because just like you need to give yourself some slack that if you don't feel brave, it's not your fault because you've been raised not to be brave, right? Do what the policeman says, do what your parents say, don't ever say anything different, don't talk back to a teacher, right? There's all these cultural influences that have suppressed our desire to tell someone how I'm feeling, is this belief we have to have the answer. Right? Hey, I need you to do something a little bit differently, and here's how you do it. And in reality, you don't have to have the answer. What you want to do is talk about what the issue is, but then you want partnership with the person on some options they might have on how to do it a little bit differently. And I'm a big fan, and I talk about the rule of three in the book, that it's great to go in with two or three options. Hey, here are some ways that we might do it a little bit differently. What do you think? Or if it's happening too quickly, let's talk next week about some ways you think you could do it a little bit differently. I'd love to hear, David, your thoughts on it. But you don't have to have the answer. And in fact, you don't have to have any answer. You could say, you know what, I don't know what the right way to move forward is. I want to work on that with you. If you're in agreement that this is something that's important to you, why don't you think about two or three ways that you can do this a little bit differently? And I'd love to hear from you for next week on what those might be. I didn't even have a solution, right? But if the person's engaged, you're helpful, you're treating them with dignity, you're being respectful, you have a relationship, you know, all these predecessors that need to be there, my likelihood of thinking about it is going to be greater. So flexibility is about recognizing that while you might have an answer, I'm not suggesting don't have one, it's not a requirement that you have one.
And so often the challenge, I think, that I hear from leaders is, well, but there is this success that has to be achieved. There's this way things have to be done. Like, that's not really, I don't know what I'm talking about with the person. How am I being flexible? But as we dive into that, I think that there's a way in which we're able to say, okay, yeah, here's what success looks like in terms of outcomes. But the conversation is really about how we get there. How do we get there together? How can you get there? How can I get there? Or, you know, Ed, in the book, I know there's an example that as you're talking about, applying some of these models, like having this conversation with your boss. And in that case, I think the one you use in the book is your boss is frequently late to the meetings, which I think all of us can identify with. That's a brave conversation, right? Say, hey, boss, this is not working. And here's the consequence of what's going on here. You don't have a right answer in terms of how they're going to adjust that because you can't. You're right. Not responsible for them. They're responsible for them, but you can still raise the subject, right?
Yeah, perfect example, right? You might believe it is hard to even bring the topic up, let alone have a solution, right? So bringing the topic up and engaging them in a conversation could be the big win. And then saying, look, I don't know enough about your life professionally and personally to tell you what the answer is. I'm going to pass that to you. But if you believe that timeliness is important, and so for a 9 a.m. meeting, you should be on at 8:55, not 9:05 or 9:10 or 9:15, then I'm going to leave the solution to you. You know, psychologists would tell you that the likelihood of me participating in something is greater if I've created or participated in the solution. If you just tell me the answer and say, this is what I want you to do, my likelihood for participating will be less.
I'm laughing as you're describing that. I had a department head early in my career who would run these meetings. He's a vice president, and he would run these meetings, and he was always late. They always ran over. Like, they were scheduled to go till this time, till, let's say, till 10 a.m. And my team and I had an obligation consistently every Monday after those meetings that we had to get to. And if he went over, we were late to our commitment to our clients and everything else. And he would go over by 15, 20 minutes sometimes consistently. And so finally I had to have the conversation. I said, listen, I'm not going to tell you have to end at 10, but I am going to tell you that we're going to get up and leave at 10 because we have to meet our client obligation. Like, we can't do that. And he said, I hear what you're saying. And he never did get his meetings to end on time, but yeah. But we did, we found a solution. We got up and left.
Yeah,
I guess that was brave. It didn't feel brave at the time, but looking back.
Well, I think the effort to say something was the moment of bravery, right? Where you found the impetus to say something to this boss about a behavior. It might've been a blind spot. He might not have known you had another meeting, or who knows, right? The list is endless. So bringing it to his attention is important. And then coming up with a solution, which clearly he didn't buy into, which was, all right, I'm going to finish my meetings on time. I mean, I tell people on a regular basis, if you're going to a meeting from 9 to 10, you know, be there by 8:55 and end the meeting, done, not bringing it to a close, but end the meeting by 9:55, right? So that everyone has 5 minutes to go to the restroom or get to the next conference room. But If you and I worked at Microsoft, we would invent a calendar device that would instantly plug meetings that end in 55 minutes and not an hour, because everybody has meetings that go hour to hour to hour. And as you know, some clients are in different buildings, right? They've got to leave this building to go to another building next
Oh,
door.
yeah.
And that your likelihood of being late is high.
Absolutely. Well, I've got one more question. I mean, it's so many more examples and even a whole method for conversations that are in the book. But as our time is winding down, speaking of being timely, I got to make sure I honor yours. So I've got another question, one specific application around flexibility. But before we go there, tell us where we can connect with you, where to find the book, anything else that you might have for us.
Great. You can go to my website, which is excellius.com. That's excellius.com. You can purchase the book through there, or you can go to amazon.com or barnesandnoble.com and find the book there. As you have said multiple times, it's called The Bravery Trick, 4 Easy Ways to Say Hard Things. And we talk about why we're not brave at work, why we should be brave at work, how to be brave at work, and then some cultural influences and how to be a receiver of brave feedback, right? It's not all about giving and having a brave conversation, but you'd want to encourage others to come to you, right? That's equally as important.
Absolutely. So, and we did talk some about setting up and leading a culture that supports bravery at this point. So I want to take it to the last question I would ask you is about something that made me laugh out loud when I was reading the book. And you're describing, when you're talking about flexibility, you're describing a specific scenario of having a bravery conversation, perhaps with someone who always has to be right. And you describe a character who only has two ways to view a topic, his way and his way, which I don't know why, but that just made me laugh out loud. It was maybe not quite what I was expecting, but his way and his way, I'm like, oh yeah, that's about right. So what do we do here? How do we have this kind of a conversation when we're talking with somebody who maybe sees the world that way and just they are as inflexible as can be, and they're convinced that there is their way and there's their way, and you can choose between those, but it's got to be one of those.
It's got to be one of those answers. Well, again, I'm not suggesting that the model I put forth in the book can solve every challenge that might exist in every workplace everywhere. But if you do work with somebody who always has to be right, play the model, right? First, get it out of your head. What is it you want to say? Why is the fact that they always have to be right problematic? Maybe there's a couple of examples that demonstrate if we had thought about it more, or if other people had a voice in the conversation, we might have had a better outcome. So get it out of your head. Talk about it with a colleague. Make sure you don't have any trigger words or don't come across as judging or belittling, that you're coming to help them. Schedule some time to meet with the person. That's the bravery moment, right? It's that moment of actually reaching out to say, hey, David, I wanted to talk with you about something that I hope you will be happy to hear. And they, of course, all the time want to know right away, well, what is it? And say, well, look, I'd rather schedule some time with you. I think it's more important that we chat one-on-one. Can I find some time on your calendar? That, to me, is the real bravery moment, because now I'm in. Now I'm on their calendar.
You're committed.
I'm committed, right? And then be fully present and share with them what you are experiencing and how the experience isn't ideal for coworkers, colleagues, clients, whoever might be negatively impacted. Again, be future focused in respect to other ways that this could be handled, and be flexible in the outcome, right? They might say, hey, thanks for coming, have a nice day, and I hope you feel better that you said something, because now this person knows that this is problematic. Before, they may not have had any idea, and I almost will guarantee you that no one has ever said these things to this person before, right? That they are this way because they've always been this way. And I wouldn't be at this level if I didn't operate this way, right? So that's why I behave this way, because I am always right. And hope that it has a positive, outcome.
As you're talking, I'm remembering, gosh, I read, I think it was The Road Less Traveled by, was it Scott Peck? Mm-hmm. I think was his name, right? And if I'm recalling the source correctly on this, but it was like something along the lines of, our job in life is to show up, speak the truth in love, and not be attached to the results. That's the flexibility part that you're talking about, is the not be attached to the results. And the for sure, the helpfulness part is the speaking the truth in love. And the show up is present. So it's like this this wisdom that you're sharing with us has so many different applications of different ways to have, and I like that you call it a trick, that it's a, and I think the trick is the shift in our mindset of being helpful as opposed to any of the other aspects.
Right. And I'll just end with using Scott Peck's quote, you can't be tied to the results because there is no guarantee that anything you say is going to have any impact on that person, right? I mean, regretfully, I wish I had a model that I could guarantee everyone that anytime they follow this model, it will have an impact, right? But the benefit is also to your own leadership development and career development, that you said something that was hard to say, that you knew it would be hard for them to hear. There's no way you could predict that they were going to listen or get engaged or want to work on it. But good for you. Good for you for saying it. Good for you for doing it. I hope you learn something from it. I hope you get better and better at this and saying things that are hard to say as your career continues to unfold.
And as you said, and demonstrated in your own career, I've certainly had that experience too. The more, this is a muscle and it's a skill that we build. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And the it never becomes, like you said, with let's say terminations, right? That never should be easy, right? You're always, somebody's hard. Livelihood is always there, but you get more confident and you get more skillful, and it does become easier with less anxiety the more that we practice.
Yeah, it never gets easy because it is someone's livelihood, but you do become a little bit more skillful to ensure the conversation is a more effective.
Absolutely.
That's the walk away, I think, from that part of our conversation.
All right. Well, the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it if you're practicing. Our guest today has been Ed Everts. The book is called The Bravery Trick, Four Easy Ways to Say Hard Things. Ed, thank you so much for sharing the model, sharing the wisdom, sharing your experiences with us. I know that listeners will benefit if they can take to heart those four aspects of practice, presence, future focus, and flexibility as we're going in and having these bravery conversations.
Thank you for having me as a guest, David. It's been great chatting with you.
Again, for the second time. Absolutely. So glad you could be with us. All right. There you have it, listener. Practice, presence, future focus, flexibility, the bravery trick, four easy ways to say hard things, and be the leader you'd want your boss to be. See you next time.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.